Good morning, everybody. We are this morning entering the kingdom of the production of drugs. I think the production of drugs is an important new global landscape, and it is, in my view, a perfect illustration of the good and ills of the global marketing, with its circulation of goods, its illegal traffic, its counterfeiting industry, providing hope and frustration as well to all planet citizens. We'll start with love and sex to rouse your interest, the interest of those tempted to sleep in the beginning of the morning. So we will hear, who is my neighbor? Alain Jamy.
Yes.
I'm trying. Les essais cliniques randomisés, mais tu parleras anglais.
En anglais, oui.
Les essais cliniques randomisés face aux agences sanitaires et aux associations de consommateurs, le cas de Intrinsa et Fibanserine. And I would like just to say a word on the fact that in the long past of ancient medicine, the Greek, the Persian, the Arabs, there was a lot of things written on plants, herbs and any kind of drugs that could improve the sexual pleasure of men. And that is every book. I worked recently on a book in Mauritania, a traditional book in the 19th century, and there are long pages on the importance of sexual desire and well-being for health among males, but not a single word about females. So let's be grateful to Alain, who is going to talk to us to a subject that will, of course, fascinate at least half of the audience.
No, I think it's interesting for all the audience, but I'm afraid to I'm going to speak in English, but I'm afraid to say that the study I'm presenting here, it's about the failure of female drug for enhancing sexual function and sexual pleasure, whereas the Viagra and sildenafil and other treatment of this kind and the treatment for premature ejaculation went just very easily. So there is really a gender dimension in this question. So the title in English has changed a little bit because I did not focus completely on the clinical trials, but I tried to to understand the location of the clinical trials inside a more complex and comprehensive system. So Intrinsa and Fibanserine are two drugs for the treatment of hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which is an official disorder, HSDD, which have been manufactured by two major global pharmaceutical companies, Boehringer Ingelheim for Fibanserine and Intrinsa for by Procter & Gamble. This was done in a partnership with medical sexologists, urologists, gynecologists, and other specialists in sexual medicine and sexual medicine organization. It's important also to stress in this at this point that sexual medicine is a new discipline which started about 20 years ago and which enhanced a lot with the emergence of Viagra, sildenafil, under the influence of the pharmaceutical industry, and it gave birth to couple of journals, but the most important is the Journal of Sexual Medicine, which has an impact factor, already has an impact factor of 4, which is important for clinical journal and medical psychological journal, and in which most of the trials and the studies about those drugs are published. So we had the development of large-scale multicenter clinical trials, plus papers which were published in major peer-reviewed journal with some of the professional clinician involved. You know that the clinician get money to try the drugs, and it is the same process in the sexual disorder. And Most of those trials have been published directly. They have been funded directly or indirectly by the pharmaceutical company, which raises the issue of the production of corporate science, in which raises the issue of the validity of the results. It's important to know that in this, so despite those clinical trials, despite pre-launch industry campaign and networking among the medical professional communities and among the public health authorities, these two drugs have not been approved by the FDA in the US, and Intrinsa was approved in France and in Europe only for specific condition, which means only for post-surgical menopause for women, which is a rather small indication, but which represent a strategy of the foot inside the door, which is well known in social psychology, which means that allows the clinician to prescribe it out of the authorization. So what we want to understand is this failure: how so much energy, how much money, how much that much investment by the pharmaceutical industry did not succeed in a period where we could think that women in the process of emancipation would be ready to use a drug that would enhance their sexual function, that would give more autonomy to sexual function, and in the perspective of gender equality, where men and women could have the same type of product in access. Pardon. So Intrinsa is a testosterone patch recommended for surgical postmenopausal women suffering diagnosed with hypoactive sexual disorder by Procter & Gamble. It was rejected by the FDA in December 2004 and approved by the European Medical Organization in 2006 for this very small indication. Flibanserin is a 5-HT1A receptor antagonist and 5-HT2A receptor antagonist. I don't know what it is, but... initially investigated as an antidepressant by Boehringer in Ingelheim, but it didn't work. The clinical trials did not give enough evidence of efficacy for depression, and it was rejected by the FDA in June 2010. Boehringer Ingelheim discontinued the research and development in October 2010, 4 months later, and there is a new drug application, which is a process to the FDA, which is submitted by a company which is called Sprout in June 2013, and it is still under review. So the rejection by the FDA discontinued the investment of Boehringer Ingelheim, but another company bought the molecule and they sponsored new clinical trials, which are published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine by the same group, and it is under application, under review. So I am not an anthropologist. I would call myself, using the expression of Madeleine Akrisch, speaking of Michel Calon, I am rather an adisciplinary, but I would complete saying by undisciplinary person. So, which means that following Madeleine Akrisch, I try to see the problems and find the question in the boîte à outils of the existing theory, and this case is very interesting because it's at the crossroads of several possibility of explanation, because it can be taken from different aspects. One possible approach would be medicalization and pharmacologization and biomedicalization as a challenge in sexual politics, which started in 1998, but it started in the early 90s with the commercialization and the conceptualization of sildenafil for the treatment of erectile dysfunction, which was conceptualized by Conrad as shifting engines in medicalization and passage to pharmacologization, which means that some interpretation says that it's the pharmacological industry which took power over the clinician, which is a phenomenon known in other situations, which applies in this one. And it is interesting to see that, as I said before, in this perspective of medicalization, that there are gender issues with the lesser development in pharmacological research for treatment of women's sexual disorder, considered as more psychological as opposed to men. In this perspective, so there are some controversies about the so-called female sexual dysfunction. One is the contestation of the epidemiologies and the triumph of the 43% prevalence of female sexual dysfunction in the United States. This number is the result of a manipulation, of a statistical manipulation, of a study which was done in 1994 by Lohmann, Gagnon, Michaels and Michaels, and which was in the context of HIV/AIDS. But they had included a couple of questions about sexual health, sexual pleasure, and quality and sexual quality of life. And they gave different numbers for every type of sexual disorder. Then they used a different statistic methodology, and they constructed the number of 43%. This paper was published in the JAMA in 1999, and the author, Lohmann, who was one of the provosts of the Chicago University and the director of the NORC, and Rosen were accused of not having disclosed the conflict of interest with the pharmacological industry, and they had to apologize about that. So most of the pharmacological industry use the 43% epidemiology as an evidence to say it's a high prevalence and there is no treatment. There is no safe and controlled treatment, which is the usual discourse of the pharmaceutical industry, increasing the prevalence and showing that there is no treatment. The classification in itself, and the categorization, is currently in revision. The APA DSM-5 was published in May, last May 2013 in San Francisco, and it is currently in the ICD of the WHO is also currently under revision, and it's it appears about female sexual disorder that some members of the committee of the APA and of the ICD try to include a distinction between disorder, which would be eligible for treatment and medical treatment, and problems and difficulties accessible to counseling. But there are a lot of opposition to the inclusion of this distinction, because when you create a condition accessible to counseling, it falls out the system of social security public insurance for reimbursement of treatment. And in most countries, counseling, psychological counseling, is not reimbursed. So there is a pressure, a political pressure, an economic pressure to say, do not disclose, exclude this condition from the status of disorder, because it will not be taken into account. It is the same discussion for the gender identity disorder. The activist organization asks that it should be excluded from the categories of mental disorder, but the people said, if we do that, you will not be reimbursed, but you will be excluded. So it's interesting, because the definition, and health anthropologists, medical anthropologists know that, the core of the definition of the disorders is not clinical, it's political, economic, and it's a result of a negotiation between that. Among other aspects, there is an opposition between the group of women psychosexologists linked to the feminist movement in the United States, which is organized in the coalition New Views of Women's Sexual Problems, which it's a group of professional women, professional, and some men psychosexologists, and they are opposed to the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, which is funded by the pharmaceutical industry, and in favor of the recognition of the disorder quality and claim for the development of drug. We see also a parallel opposition between the British Medical Journal, which appears to be a kind of leftist radical journal, in which people like Ray Moynihan publish some of the paper about disease mongering, and the Journal of Sexual Medicine, which supports and publish most of the trial. The opposition appears like more like a professional opposition, the psychosexologist being animated at some point by the fear of losing the market of therapy, that the development of pharmacological treatment will destroy the market of psychological intervention. But it is also based on different conception of women sexuality. Another aspect is the evolution of the status of pharmacologization and the role of pharmacological industries, the role of corporate science and public health control institutions. You know that in France we had a couple of scandals recently that makes, according to the voice of an insider of the ex-Agence du Médicament, make the work of those people impossible. They cannot anymore make any decision because they are afraid to be accused of whatever. And the problem in France actually is the collusion between the experts, because the best experts in the field, they have no choice. They have to work with the pharmacological industries, and they are the experts in the public health safety institution. There is a recent PhD test by Ravelli, Quentin Ravelli, which gives a PhD dissertation, which gives a lot of description, ethnographic and based on interview, of this kind of collusion of the same people, men, being part of at all the level of the chain of production and decision. So there is a huge process of transformation of pharmacological research, including the safety issues and conflicts and disclosure of conflict of interest, which make appear that randomized clinical trials appear as an insufficient argument for approval and delivery of the new drugs. And it is also based on the role of patients, consumers, organization in this process of decision. We have the disease mongering process that some of you may know, which is the result of a large coalition of opponents to pharmacological industries, which means it's the creation of new disease. And you had one of the major urologists working in the field of sildenafil and male erectile dysfunction gave one day an interview in the Village Voice, when it existed, saying that if you have a product, you need to have a disease. And it's not you have a disease, you need to have a product. You have a product, then you have to create a disease to use the product. So this is interesting, this way of doing. And then there is a critique of the manufacture of psychotropic drugs and corporate science, and I refer mostly to the work of Apfelbaum, Healy, and Sismondo. You know that David Healy was not taken as a professor in a university in Canada because of his strong opposition to Eli Lilly, which was a big scandal in this situation. So there were some clinical trials for both flibanserin and Intrinsa, I am in the process of studying in detail, and I am, because I wanted to show in this paper the place of the studies according to other social factors. But you can see that these this process of clinical trials follows, but this could be discussed also, follows some of the recommendation of the clinical randomized clinical trial. So you have the phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, and you have also the new studies after the rejection, as it was the case for thalidomide. So it comes back to the so one controversy in the process of rejection of one aspect was, so the different position of the activist organization versus the industry. One is about the definition of disorder, real disorder of disease monitoring. There is an aspect which is very important, which is the representation of women's sexuality in a broad psychosocial cultural context, respecting life stage and cultural diversity versus the biologization of sexual disorder. And there is also the idea from the new view of sexual problems that the development of these drugs will reinforce the vulnerability of women by pathologizing the condition in which women are in situation with adverse partners, and it will, according to this view, it will pathologize the refusal of women to have sex when they are in a very bad situation with their partner. This is also a gender dimension, because erectile dysfunction of premature ejaculation is never considered as an adaptive situation of the man in relation to an adverse situation with a woman, at least. So, you know, the adversity, and I think we did not discuss enough of the gender dimension, maybe in this in this conference. But this is one aspect about the conference, the presentation of sexuality. Then there is the idea, which is opposed of the pharmaceutical industry, that international approval would allow to regulate the market and ensure more safety for women, who would not be obliged to buy a fake and counterfeit drugs on the market. Then there is the approval strategies, which was the clinical trials. But you can see that there is a real problem in pharmaceutical, in health research and pharmacological research. Everything is done by the industry, from the conception of the clinical trial to the submission and approval to a sanitary institution. And the critique of this process was based on the results of those clinical trials, that the long-term safety, especially for young women, was not demonstrated. The limited effectiveness of the result, which was marked by the increase of satisfactory sexual events, was not considered as enough as a positive result. And then there was the biased pre-launch marketing campaign. So those products were rejected. And what is interesting, if you take I will conclude on that, is the difference between France and Europe and the US in the process of approval of the drugs, which is interesting, that the FDA, the US process, appears to be more transparent, with the possibility of public hearing, which means that expert